My grandparents were German, Clown said.
My father sighed and went back to concentrating on his lasagna. Yet another fuck-up in the family. My mother was white-faced. Bad enough her daughters didn't attend church. The possibility of non-Catholic grandchildren was a disaster right up there with nuclear annihilation. Maybe I need to put a couple more cookies on the plate, my mother said, pushing back from the table. One more cookie run, and my mother was going to be passed out on the kitchen floor. At 9 o'clock, Angie and Mary Alice were tucked into bed. My grandmother was somewhere with her stud muffin, and my mother and father were in front of the television. Valerie and Albert Clown were discussing things in the kitchen, and Diesel and I were standing outside on the sidewalk in front of the CRV. It was cold, and our breath made frost clouds. "So what happens now?" I asked. "Do you get beamed back up?"
"Not tonight. Couldn't get a flight."
My eyebrows raised a quarter of an inch.
"I'm kidding," he said. "Boy, you'll believe anything."
Apparently. "Well, it's been a real treat," I said, "but I've got to go now."
"Sure. See you around."
I got into the CRV, cranked the engine over, and took off. When I got to the corner, I swiveled in my seat and looked back. Diesel was still standing exactly where I'd left him. I drove around the block, and when I returned to my parents' house, the sidewalk was empty. Diesel had vanished without a trace. He didn't pop into my car when I was halfway home. He didn't appear in my apartment building hallway. He wasn't in my kitchen, bedroom, or bathroom. I dropped a piece of butter cookie into the hamster cage on my kitchen counter and watched Rex jump off his wheel and rush at the cookie. "We got rid of the alien," I said to Rex. "Good deal, huh?" Rex looked like he was thinking alien schmalien. I guess when you live in a glass cage, you don't care a lot about aliens in the kitchen. When you're a woman alone in an apartment, aliens are pretty damn frightening. Except for Diesel. Diesel was inconvenient and confusing, and as much as I hate to admit it, Diesel was annoyingly likable. Frightening had dropped low on the list. "So," I said to Rex, "why do you suppose I'm not afraid of Diesel? Probably some kind of alien magic, right?" Rex was working at getting the cookie into his cheek pouch. "And while we're having this discussion," I said to Rex, "I want to reassure you that I haven't forgotten about Christmas. I know it's only 4 days away, but I made cookies today. That's a good start, right?" Truth is, there wasn't a trace of Christmas in my apartment. Counting down 4 days, and I didn't have a red bow or twinkle light in sight. Plus, I didn't have presents for anyone. "How did this happen?" I asked Rex. "It seemed like just yesterday that Christmas was months away." I opened my eyes and shrieked. Diesel was standing beside my bed, staring down at me. I grabbed the sheet and pulled it up to my chin. "What? How?" I asked. He handed me a large-size takeout coffee.
"Didn't we do this bit yesterday?"
"I thought you were gone."
"Yeah, but now I'm back. This is the part where you say, 'Good morning, nice to see you. Thanks for the coffee.'"
I pried the plastic lid off and examined the coffee. It looked like coffee. It smelled like coffee.
"Cripes," he said. "It's just coffee."
"A girl can never be too careful." Diesel took the coffee back and drank it.
"Rise and shine, gorgeous. We have things to do. We need to find Sandy Claus."
"I know why I need to find Sandy Claus. I don't know why you need to find Sandy Claus."
"Just being a good guy. I thought I'd come back and help you out."
"Uh-huh."
"Are you going to get up or what?" he said.
"I'm not getting up with you standing there, and I'm not taking a shower with you in my apartment either. Go out and wait for me in the hall." He shook his head.
"You are so untrusting."
"Go!" I waited until I heard the front door open and close, and then I slid out of bed and crept to the living room. Empty. I padded barefoot to the front door, opened the door, and looked out. Diesel was leaning against the opposite wall, arms crossed over his chest, looking bored.
"Just checking," I said.
"You're not going to pop into my bathroom when I'm in there, are you?"
"No."
"Promise?"
"Honey, I don't need a thrill that bad."
I closed and locked the door, ran into the bathroom, took the fastest shower in the history of Plum, rushed back to my bedroom and got dressed in my usual uniform of jeans, boots, and t-shirt. I refilled Rex's water bottle and gave him some hamster crunches, a raisin, and a corn chip for breakfast. He rushed out of his soup can, stuffed the raisin and the corn chip into his cheek pouch, and returned to his soup can. I'd had a brilliant idea while I was in the shower. I knew a guy who might help me find Claus. His name was Randy Briggs. Briggs wasn't an elf, but he was only 3 feet tall. Maybe that was good enough. I thumbed through my address book and found Briggs' phone number. Briggs was a self-employed computer geek. He usually worked at home, and he usually needed money. "Hey," I said to him, "I have a job for you. I need an undercover elf."
"I'm not an elf."
"Yes, but you're short."
"Christ," Briggs said.
And he hung up. Probably best to talk to Briggs in person. Unfortunately, I now had a dilemma. I thought there was a possibility that Diesel might go away if I never opened the door and let him in. Problem was, I needed to go out. I opened the door and looked at Diesel.
"Yeah, I'm still here," he said.
"I need to go someplace."
"No kidding."
"Alone."
"It's a supernatural thing, isn't it? It still got you weirded out, right?"
He slung an arm around my shoulders.
"I bet you think Spider-Man is a real cute guy. I bet you think it'd be fun to be friends with a guy like that."
"Maybe."
"So, just pretend I'm Spidey."
I looked at him sideways. "Are you Spidey?"
"No, he's a lot shorter."
I grabbed my bag and my keys and shrugged into my fleece-lined jacket. I locked my front door and took the stairs to the parking lot. Diesel was right behind me.
"We can take my car," he said.
"You have a car?" There was a black Jaguar parked a few feet from the back entrance to my apartment building. Diesel beeped the Jag open with the remote.
"Wow,"
I said. "You do okay for an alien."
"I'm not an alien."
"Yeah, you keep saying that, but I don't know what else to call you."
"Call me Diesel."
I angled onto the passenger side seat and buckled in. "It's stolen, right?" Diesel looked over at me and smiled.
"Damn."
"We're going to Cloverleaf Apartments on Grand. It's about a mile from here, off Hamilton." The Cloverleaf apartment building looked a lot like mine. It was a big red brick cube and strictly utilitarian. 3 stories, a front and a back entrance, parking lot in the rear. Randy Briggs lived on the 2nd floor. I'd met him a while back in a professional capacity. He'd been accused of carrying a concealed weapon and had failed to appear for a court appearance. I dragged him kicking and screaming back into the system. The charge had actually been borderline bogus, and Briggs was ultimately released without penalty.
"And why are we doing this?"
Diesel asked, climbing the stairs to the 2nd floor. "There was a want ad in the paper for toy makers. When I called and inquired about Sandy Claus, I got disconnected."
"And in your mind, this indicates that Claus is part of the Toymaker operation."
"I think it's suspicious and warrants further investigation. I'm going to ask this guy I know to help infiltrate the operation."
"Is he a Toymaker?"
"No, he has other talents." We were in the stairwell, and all of a sudden we were plunged into total darkness. I felt Diesel step closer, felt his hand protectively settle at my waist. "Power blackout," I said. "Morelli told me they were happening all over Trenton."
"Great," Diesel said. "Just what I need. Power blackouts."
"Not a big deal," I told him. "Morelli said they last long enough to snarl traffic and then disappear."
"Princess, It's a bigger deal than you could possibly imagine.
I had no idea what he meant by that, but it didn't sound good. I was about to ask him when the lights popped back on, and we took the rest of the stairs to the second floor. I rapped on the door to 2B, and there was no response. I put my ear to the door and listened.
"Hear anything?" Diesel asked.
"Television." I rapped again. "Open the door, Randy. I know you're in there."
"Go away," Randy called. "I'm working."
"You're not working. You're watching television." The door was wrenched open, and Randy glared out at me.
"What?"
Diesel looked down at Randy.
"You're a midget."
"No shit, Sherlock," Randy said. "And just for the record, midget is no longer politically correct."
"So what do you like?" Diesel asked. "How about little dude?"
Randy was holding a soup ladle, and he whacked Diesel in the knee with it.
"Don't mess with me, wise ass."
Diesel reached down, grabbed Briggs by the front of his shirt, and lifted him 3 feet off the floor so they were eye level.
"You need to get a sense of humor," Diesel said, "and you'll want to lose the soup ladle."
The soup ladle slid through Randy's fingers and clattered onto the parquet floor.
"So you don't want to be called a little dude," Diesel said. "What do you want to be called?"
"I'm a little person,"
Randy said, feet dangling in the air. Diesel grinned at Randy.
"Little person? That's the best you can do?"
Diesel set Randy back down on the floor, and Randy gave himself a shake, looking a lot like a bird settling its feathers.
"So," I said, "now that we have that straightened out..."
Briggs looked at me.
"Here it comes."
"Have I ever asked for a favor?"
"Yes."
"Okay, but I saved your life."
"My life wouldn't have been in danger in the first place if it wasn't for you."
"All I want is for you to pose as an elf." Diesel gave a snort of laughter. I cut my eyes to him, and he squelched the laughter down to a grin.
"I am not an elf," Briggs said. "Do I have pointy ears? No. Do I wear shoes that turn up on the ends? No. Do I enjoy this humiliation? No, no, no."
"I'll pay you for your time."
"Oh," Briggs said. "That's different."
I handed the ad over to Briggs. "All you have to do is answer this ad. Probably you don't even have to say you're an elf. Probably you could just tell him you're qualified. And then when you go for the job interview, keep your eyes open for a guy named Sandy Claus. He's FTA.
"Give me a break. Santa Claus is FTA? How about the Easter Bunny? Is the Easter Bunny FTA too?"
I flashed the photo of Sandy Claus at Briggs, and I spelled the name for him. I gave Briggs my card with my cell phone and pager number. And I left, not wanting to overstay my welcome, not wanting to give him time to change his mind. I looked over at Diesel's knee when we were in the car. "Are you okay?"
"Yeah, he hits like a girl. Someone needs to show him how to swing a soup ladle."
Chapter 3. Connie Rizzoli manages my cousin Vinny's bail bonds office. Connie is a couple years older than me. She has big hair, big boobs, and a short fuse, and she could probably kick my butt from here to downtown Trenton. Good thing for me, Connie never feels compelled to kick my butt, since Connie and I are friends. I called Connie and asked her to check on water and electric accounts for Claus. Between semi-clandestine computer searches and the tight-knit network of Berg women who love to dish, there isn't a lot of information Connie and I can't access. I'd barely disconnected with Connie when my cell phone chirped. It was my mother.
"Help,"
she said. I could hear a lot of hysterical shouting going on in the background.
"What's going on?" "Valerie took one of those home pregnancy tests, and now she's got herself locked in the bathroom."
"Don't worry about it. She'll come out when she gets hungry."
"It's our only bathroom. I've got two kids home from school for the holidays, an old lady with a bad bladder, and your father. Everybody needs to use the bathroom."
"And?"
"Do something. Shoot the lock off."
Now, if I was any kind of a good sister and loving daughter, I'd have sympathy for Valerie. I'd be worried about her physical and emotional health. The ugly truth is, Valerie was always the perfect child, and I was the kid who had the skin knee, consistently flunked spelling, and lived in la-la land. My entire childhood was an out-of-body experience. Even as adults, Valerie had the great marriage and gave birth to two grandchildren. I had the marriage from hell that ended before my father got the wedding reception paid off. So I love my sister and wish her well, but it's hard not to smile once in a while now that her life is in the toilet.
Uh-oh, Diesel said. I'm not sure I like that smile.
It sort of slipped out. Actually, I need you to help me with a domestic problem. I need a lock opened.
Someday I should show you some of my other skills.
Oh, boy. It's never good when a man starts talking about his skills. Before you know it, you're in the garage watching a power tool demonstration. And after all the power tools are revved, there's only one tool left to haul out of the box. Someday a study should be done on the effect of testosterone production in the presence of a bandsaw. Everyone was huddled outside the bathroom when I got to my parents' house. Mary Alice was galloping in circles, and the rest of my family was alternately pacing and yelling and banging on the door.
"Pretty amazing," Diesel said to me. "I'm always knocked out by the way a family can be at the upper end of dysfunction and insanity and still work so well as a unit. Do you want me to open the door?"
"No." I was afraid they'd all rush in and someone would get trampled in the stampede. I went downstairs to the kitchen and out the back door. There was a small roof over the back stoop, and the roof butted up to the bathroom window. When I was a kid, I used to sneak out the bathroom window to hang with my friends. "Give me a boost up," I said to Diesel. "I'll bring her out through the window. Then you can open the door." Diesel laced his fingers together. I put my foot in his hands, and he lifted me to roof level. I scrambled onto the roof and glanced down at him. He was impressively strong. "Could you stop a runaway freight train?" I asked.
"Probably not a freight train. That would be Superman."
I looked in the window at Valerie. She was sitting on the toilet lid, staring at the little test strip. She looked up when I knocked.
"Open up," I said. "It's cold out here."
She pressed her nose to the window and looked out.
"Are you alone?"
"I'm with Diesel." She looked down to the ground, and Diesel waved to her. It was a goofy little finger wave. Valerie opened the window, and I climbed inside.
"What's going on?" I asked. "Look at my test strip."
"Maybe it made a mistake."
"It's the fifth time I've taken the test. They keep coming out positive. I'm pregnant. I'm goddamn pregnant. Albert Clown got me pregnant."
"Didn't you take precautions?"
"No, I didn't take precautions. Look at him. He looks like a loaf of yeast bread just before you bake it. He's soft and white and totally without substance. Who would have thought he'd have sperm? Do you know what this poor kid will look like?"
Valerie wailed.
"It'll look like a dinner roll."
"Maybe this isn't so bad. I thought you were all anxious to get married."
"I was anxious to get married, not to get pregnant. And I don't want to marry Clown. He lives with his mother, for God's sake. And he makes no money."
"He's a lawyer."
"He chases ambulances down the street. He might as well be a German shepherd."
It was true. Clown was having a difficult time getting his practice established and had resorted to listening to the police band. "A woman has choices these days," I said.
"Not in this family."
Valerie was pacing and waving her arms.
"We're Catholic, for Christ's sake."
"Yeah, but you never go to church. It isn't like you have religion."
"You know what's left when the religion goes away? Guilt. Guilt never goes away. I'm stuck with the goddamn guilt for the rest of my life. And what about Mom? I even mention abortion and she'll be crossing herself until her arm falls off."
"Don't tell her. Tell her the strip was negative." Valerie stopped pacing and looked at me.
"Would you get an abortion?"
"Whoa, me?" I took a beat to think about it. "I don't know," I said. "I'm having a hard time relating. The closest I've come to childbirth is buying a hamster.
Fine, Valerie said. Suppose Rex was never born. Suppose the mommy hamster had an abortion, and Rex was bagged up along with the dirty kennel bedding in the breeder hamster cage.
Sharp pain to the heart.
When you put it that way...
It's all his fault, Valerie said. I'm going to find him. I'm going to track him down, and I'm going to maim him.
Clown?
No, my dog-turned ex-husband. If he hadn't run off with the babysitter, this never would have happened. We were so happy. I don't know what went wrong. One minute we were a family, and the next thing I know, he's in the coat closet with the babysitter.
Open up!
Grandma yelled from the other side of the door.
I gotta go. Lock yourself in some other room.
Just because you have the baby doesn't mean you have to marry Clown, I said. Although I actually thought Valerie could do a lot worse than Albert Clown. I liked Clown. He wasn't a big, handsome, super cool guy, but he tried hard at everything. He was nice to Valerie and the girls, and there seemed to be genuine affection between them all. I wasn't sure anymore what made a good marriage. There had to be love, of course, but there were so many different kinds of love, and clearly some love was more enduring than others. Valerie and I thought we'd found the loves of our lives, and look where that took us. Shoes, I said to Valerie. When in doubt, I find it always helps if I buy a new pair of shoes. You should go shopping. Valerie looked over at the door.
I could use a new pair of shoes, but I don't want to go out there.
Use the window. Valerie climbed out the window, got to the edge of the roof, and hesitated.
This is scary.
It's not a big deal, Diesel said. Just hang your ass over the edge and I'll bring you down.
Valerie looked back at me. Trust him, I said. Trust Superman, Spider-Man, E.T., the Ghost of Christmas Present, whoever the hell.
I don't know, Valerie said. This feels kind of high. I don't like the way this feels. Maybe I need to go back into the house.
Valerie turned toward the window, and her foot slipped on the shingle roof. She shrieked, flailing out with her arms, grabbing me by my jacket.
Help! Help!
She yanked me forward, and we both lost balance, slammed onto the roof, and rolled off the edge, clinging together. We crashed into Diesel, and the three of us went to the ground. Diesel was flat on his back. I was on top of him, and Val was on top of me. The whole family came running out the back door and crowded around us.
What's going on? Grandma wanted to know. Is this some new sex thing?
If she jumps on the pile, I'm out of here, Diesel said.
Call 911, my mother said. Don't anybody move. Your backs might be broken.
She looked down at Valerie.
Can you wiggle your toes?
You didn't unlock the bathroom, my father said to Valerie. Someone's got to go back up and unlock the bathroom.
Frank, I told you to call 911.
We don't need 911, I said. We just need for Valerie to get off me.
My mother pulled Valerie to her feet.
Is the baby okay? Did you hurt yourself? I can't believe you went out through the window.
What about me? I said. I fell too.
You're always falling, my mother said. You jumped off the garage roof when you were 7 years old. And now people shoot at you.
She shook her finger at me.
You're a bad influence on your sister. She never used to do things like this.
I was still lying on top of Diesel, and I was sort of enjoying it.
I knew you'd come around, Diesel said to me.
I narrowed my eyes.
I have not come around.
My pager buzzed at my waist. I rolled off Diesel and checked the readout. It was Randy Briggs. I got to my feet and went into the house to use the phone, while Diesel went upstairs to unlock the bathroom door. My father followed Diesel to the bathroom.
Women,
my father said.
There's got to be a better way.
I was waiting at the door when Diesel came down.
Randy's got a job interview, I said. He's on the road. I have the address.
What about the shopping?
Valerie asked.
You have to shop by yourself, I said. I have to find Sandy Claus. And why aren't you working?
I don't want to see Albert. I don't know what to say to him.
I'm lost, Diesel said. What's Albert got to do with working?
He's Valerie's boss.
This is like watching daytime television, Diesel said.
Look at you, my mother said to me. It's almost Christmas and you're not wearing anything red.
She took a Christmas tree pin off her shirt and attached it to my jacket.
Have you bought your tree yet? She asked.
I haven't had time to get a tree.
You have to make time, my mother said. Before you know it, your life will be over and you'll be dead. And then what?
You have a tree, I said. Why can't I use yours?
Boy, you don't know much, my grandmother said.
Diesel was standing back on his heels, hands in his pockets, smiling again.
Go to the car, I said to Diesel, and stop smiling.
It's Christmas time, Diesel said. Everybody smiles at Christmas time.
Wait right here, my mother said. Let me pack you a bag for lunch.
No time, I said to my mother. I need to get moving.
It'll only take a minute.
She was already in the kitchen, and I could hear the refrigerator open and close, and drawers open and close. And my mother returned with a bag of food.
Thanks, I said.
Diesel looked in the bag and extracted a cookie.
Chocolate chip, my favorite.
I had a feeling every cookie was Diesel's favorite. When we were both in the car, I turned to Diesel. I want to know about you.
There isn't a lot to tell. If I hadn't gotten dropped into your kitchen, we wouldn't be having this conversation. If you met me on the street, you'd think I was just another guy.
So, you're strong and can open locks. Anything else you're especially good at? Diesel smiled at me. All men think that, I said. Diesel pulled onto Hamilton Avenue and turned left.
What happens when you find Claus?
I hand him over to the police. Then my cousin Vinny probably goes to the lockup and bails Claus out a second time.
Why would Vinny do that?
He gets paid more money. Claus has a local business and he signed his house over for security, so it's a good risk for Vinny.
And what if Claus doesn't want to be handed over to the police? Do you shoot him?
I hardly ever shoot people.
This should be fun, Diesel said.
I cut my eyes to him. Is there something you're not telling me?
Lots of things.
I put my finger to my lower lid.
You have a problem?
He asked. I twitch.
I bet that would go away if you got a Christmas tree.
All right, okay, I'll get a Christmas tree.
When?
When I have time, and you're driving too slow. Where'd you learn how to drive? Florida? Diesel stopped the car in the middle of the road.
Take a deep breath.
What are you doing? Are you nuts? You can't just stop in the middle of the road.
Take a deep breath. Count to 10.
I took a breath, and I counted to 10.
Count slower, Diesel said.
The guy behind us honked his horn, and I cracked my knuckles. My eye was twitching like mad.
This isn't working, I said. You're giving me heart palpitations. People in Jersey don't do slow down.
We're sitting in traffic, Diesel said. Notice that the car in front of us is less than a car length away and not moving. The only way to drive faster would be to drive on the sidewalk.
What's your point?
I can't fit on the sidewalk.
So do something supernatural, I said. Can't you tip the car sideways or something? They do that in the movies all the time.
Sorry, I flunked levitation.
My luck, I get a guy who flunked levitation. 20 minutes later, we parked across from a hole-in-the-wall storefront office. The makeshift sign in the window advertised immediate openings for master toymakers. I wanted to take a closer look, so we left the car and crossed the street. We stood on the sidewalk and looked through the dusty plate glass window. Inside, the place was wall-to-wall little people.
Are they elves? I asked Diesel. I don't see any pointy ears.
Hard to tell at this distance. And I heard somewhere that elves don't necessarily have pointy ears.
So elves could be walking around in our midst, disguised as normal, everyday, vertically challenged citizens. Diesel looked at me and grimaced.
You don't really believe in elves, do you?
Of course not, I said. But the truth was that I didn't know what I believed in anymore. I mean, what the hell was Diesel? And if I believed in Diesel, why not believe in elves? "Do you see Briggs?" I asked him.
"He's at the back talking to a big guy with a clipboard, and I don't see claws."
We watched for a moment longer, and then retreated to the jag and worked our way through my mother's food bag. After a while, Randy Briggs came out, walked halfway down the block, and got into the passenger side of a waiting car. The car pulled away, and we followed. Before we'd gone two blocks, my cell phone buzzed in my bag.
"Cripes, is that you behind me in the jag?"
Briggs asked.
"You bounty hunters must do okay to be riding around in a jag."
"Diesel isn't a bounty hunter. He's an alien or something."
"Yeah, whatever. Man, I've never seen so many little people in one place. It was like they came out of the woodwork. I thought I knew everyone in the area, but I didn't know any of these guys."
"Did you get hired?"
"Yeah, but I'm not going to make toys. I got a job in the office setting up a website."
"What about Claus?"
"Didn't see him. No one said anything to me about anyone named Claus. I start work tomorrow. Maybe I'll see him at the factory."
"Factory?"
"Yeah, that's what this is, a small toy factory. They're gonna make handmade toys and advertise that they were made by elves. Pretty cool, huh?"
"Do you suppose some of these little people today actually were elves?" There was a pause where I could imagine Briggs staring open-mouthed at the phone.
"What are you, nuts?"
he finally said. "So, where is this factory?" I asked Briggs.
"It's in a light industrial complex off Route 1. You aren't going to screw up this job for me, are you? This is a dream job. The pay is good, and the guy who hired me said the toilets are all made for little people. I won't have to climb up on a stool to take a crap."
"I'm not going to screw it up for you. What's the address?"
"I'm not telling you. I don't want to lose the job."
And he hung up. I looked over at Diesel. "When the car in front of us stops and Briggs gets out, I want you to run over him."
"I'd really like to do that, but then he'd probably be dead, and we couldn't follow him to work tomorrow."
I glanced at the almost empty bag of food sitting between my feet, and I had an idea. "What does Elaine do with all her cookies?" I asked Diesel.
"Is this a trick question?"
"She said she bakes cookies every day. Lots of cookies, if yesterday's batch was any indicator. So what does she do with them? They don't have family in the area. Sandy wasn't at home. Does she eat them all herself?"
"Maybe she gives them away."
"Turn around," I said. "Go back to the employment place." It took less than 5 minutes for us to get back to the storefront office. "Wait here," I said. "I'll only be a minute." I jumped out of the car, ran across the street, and into the office. It was still wall-to-wall little people, but now the little people were all wearing fake elf ears. I was about 10 feet into the fake elves when I realized the room had gone dead silent. "Hi," I said brightly. "I saw the sign in the window, and I'd like to apply for a job."
"You're too big," someone said behind me. "These jobs are for elves."
"That's not fair," I said. "I could report you for height discrimination." I wasn't sure exactly who was in charge of height discrimination, but it seemed like there should be some agency somewhere that would address the issue. I mean, where are the protections for the masses? Where are the protections for people who are average?
"We don't want your kind here," someone else said. "Get out!"
"My kind?"
"Big and stupid."
"Hey, listen to me, shorty." A cookie came flying through the air and hit me in the back of the head. I looked down at the cookie. Gingerbread. "Where did this cookie come from?" I asked. "Do you have any more? Did Sandy's sister Elaine make this cookie?"
"Get her!"
someone yelled, and I was hit with a barrage of cookies. They were coming from everywhere. Gingerbread, peanut butter, chocolate macaroons. The elves were berserk, yelling and swarming around me. I was hit in the forehead with an iced butter cookie, and someone bit me in the back of the leg. I had elves hanging on me like ticks on a dog. I felt Diesel come up hard to my back. He wrapped his arm around me, holding me tight against him, and he hauled me out of there with my feet 2 inches off the ground. He was kicking elves out of the way as he went, occasionally grabbing one by the shirt and throwing him across the room. He got to the sidewalk and rammed the office door closed and did his magical locking thing, trapping the elves inside. Contorted little elf faces smooshed up against the large glass windows, glaring out at us, yelling elf threats, their pudgy little elf middle fingers extended. Inside, the room was a wreck. Tables and chairs were overturned, and cookies were smashed everywhere. Diesel set me on my feet, took me by the hand, and yanked me to the car.
"What the hell was that about?" he asked. "I've never seen anything like it. A whole room filled with pissed-off little people. It was fucking frightening."
"I think they were elves. Did you see their ears?"
"Their ears were fake," Diesel said.
I slid onto the passenger seat, and a sigh escaped. "I know. I just don't want to have to tell anyone I was attacked by a horde of angry little people. A horde of angry elves sounds better somehow." A fake elf smashed through the plate glass door with a fire axe, and Diesel took off. "Did you see the cookies?" I asked him. "They look just like Elaine's cookies."
"Honey, all cookies look alike."
"Yes, but they might have been Elaine's cookies." My cell phone chirped.
"I'm at the mall," Valerie said, "and I need help. I can't remember everything that was on Mary Alice's list. I got her the Barbie, the television, the game, and the ice skates. I have the train and the computer at home. Do you remember what else she wanted?"
"How are you going to pay for all that?"
"MasterCard."
"It'll take you 5 years to pay it off."
"I don't care. It's Christmas. You have to do these things at Christmas."
"Oh, yeah. I kept forgetting. Mary Alice had about 50 things on that list. The only one I remember is the pony."
"Oh, my God!"
Valerie cried.
"The pony! How could I forget the pony?"
"Val, you can't get her a pony. This isn't Little House on the Prairie. We live in Trenton. Kids in Trenton don't get ponies."
"But she wants one. She'll hate me if I don't get her a pony. It'll ruin her Christmas."
Boy, I was really glad I had a hamster. I was planning on giving Rex a raisin for Christmas. I hung up on Valerie and I turned to Diesel. "Do you have any kids?"
"No."
"How do you feel about kids?"
"The same way I feel about fake elves. I think they're cute, from a distance."
"Suppose you wanted to have kids. Could you reproduce?" Diesel looked over at me.
"Could I reproduce? Yeah, I guess I could."
He gave his head a shake.
"I have to tell you, I am never again going to let anyone pop me in on someone. It's too weird. Not that this was my idea in the first place."
He reached across me into the bag my mother gave us and found a leftover brownie.
"Usually women are asking me to buy them a beer. Not you. You're asking me if I can reproduce."
"Make a turn at Clinton," I told him. "I want to have another chat with Elaine." It was mid-afternoon and unusually gloomy when Diesel drove down Grape Street. Dark clouds swirled in the sky, and an eerie green light streaked through them. The air felt heavy and ominously charged. Doomsday air. Lights were on in houses, and Elaine had her roof lights blazing, blinking out her season's greetings. Diesel parked in front of the house, and we both got out. The wind had picked up, and I pulled my chin in and walked head down to Sandy Claw's front porch.
"I'm very busy,"
Elaine said when she answered the door. Diesel brushed past her into the house.
"It smells like you're still baking cookies."
Elaine followed Diesel into the kitchen, half running to keep up with Diesel's stride.
"Pecan shortbread for tomorrow," she said, "and big cookies with M&Ms in them."
"I'm curious," Diesel said. "Who eats all these cookies?"
"The elves, of course."
Diesel and I exchanged glances.
"They're not really elves," Elaine said. "Sandy just likes to call them that. His little elves. Sandy is so clever. He has a whole scheme worked out to sell toys. It's because of his name, Sandy Claus. Have you noticed how it sounds like Santa Claus?"
"How many elves are you feeding?" Diesel asked Elaine.
"Goodness, I don't know, but there must be a lot of them. I make dozens of cookies every day.
And they go where?
I don't know exactly. Lester stops around and picks them up. Lester is Sandy's production manager.
About 5'10", gray hair, slim, dark-rimmed glasses, Diesel asked.
Yes, that's him, Elaine said.
The guy who was interviewing elves.
I don't mean to be rude, Elaine said, but you're going to have to leave now. I have to finish my baking.
You don't mind if I look around, do you? Diesel asked.
Elaine nervously picked at her apron.
I don't see why you would want to do that. Sandy isn't here.
Diesel opened the door to a small downstairs powder room and looked inside.
Are you sure you don't know where Sandy is?
Stop that, Elaine said. Stop snooping in my house. I'm going to call the police.
We have a legal right to search this house, Diesel said. Isn't that right, Steph?
Yep. We received that right when your brother signed his bond agreement.
This whole thing is so silly, Elaine said. All over a couple power tools and some paint. And Sandy wouldn't have had to steal anything if the store had been open. You can't stop a whole production line just because you run out of Morning Glory paint. And everyone knows elves work at night. My goodness, Sandy has enough labor problems without having a whole crew sit out until the stores open at 9 a.m.
I thought they weren't actually elves.
Real elves, fake elves, what's the difference? They all get time and a half after 5 o'clock.
Diesel leaned against the kitchen counter, arms crossed over his chest.
When was the last time you talked to Sandy?
He called me at lunchtime.
Elaine pressed her lips together.
Did you tell him I was looking for him?
Yes.
Elaine glanced at me and then looked back at Diesel.
I've been trying to be discreet in front of Miss Plum.
Too late for that, Diesel said. I was dropped into her kitchen.
Elaine looked horrified.
How did that happen?
Diesel did a palms up and an I don't know shrug.
It would have to be a team effort. I'm not easy to move.
Elaine wiped her hands on her apron.
I'm sorry, but Sandy doesn't want to talk to you. He wants to be left alone.
I'm curious, Diesel said. Why the name Sandy Claus?
Elaine took a tray of cookies from the oven and set them on top of the stove.
His birth name was Sander Clausen. We thought it was appropriate that he return to his birth name now that he's retired. Sandy Claus seemed like a natural derivative.
Sander Clausen, Diesel said. I didn't read that far back in the file.
Hold on here. File? What the heck are they talking about? Okay, now I'm really confused. Clearly, Elaine and Diesel know each other. It sounds like they recognized each other from the very beginning, and Diesel kept that tidbit of information secret from me. This was presenting me with the opportunity to practice some anger management.
Sander wants to make toys. He should be able to do what he wants in retirement, Elaine said.
No one cares if he makes toys in his retirement, Diesel said. I'm here because Ring followed him out.
The surprise was obvious.
Ring?
Diesel pushed off the counter, took a cookie, and turned to leave.
You have to persuade Sandor to cooperate with me, he said to Elaine. I'm trying to protect him.
Elaine nodded.
I didn't know about Ring.
Ring? Am I understanding this correctly? There's someone or something named Ring involved in this mess? I didn't say a word until we were back in the Jag. I was trying to look casual, but I was fuming inside. I felt like Demon Stephanie with glowing red eyeballs and snarling gargoyle mouth. Fortunately, the image was all internal. Or at least I hoped it was all internal. What the hell was that all about? I asked Diesel, making an effort to squelch the demon thing, going with steely eyes and tight lips instead. Diesel turned in his seat and looked at me. Thinking. Making silent assessments. Trying to decide what to tell me? I asked, still sticking with the steely eyes.
Yeah.
He was Mr. Serious, not smiling. I waited him out.
Some human beings have the ability to operate beyond what are considered to be normal limitations, Diesel finally said. Most of these people tend to have rogue personalities and work pretty much alone, playing by their own rules. Sandor was one of the best. Very powerful and very good. Unfortunately, he's old, and he's lost his power, so he's retired. Usually retirees go into an assisted living complex in Lakewood. Sandor tried it and decided he wanted out.
And Ring?
Ring's a bad guy. Old, like Sandor. The story I was told is that Ring and Sandor were best friends when they were kids. I guess they both knew they were different, and this was a secret they shared. As they got older, the differences in their personalities drove a wedge between them. Ring was using his power to dominate people and to amuse himself, and Sandor was using his power mostly to clean up after Ring. When they reached full power in their early 20s, some of Ring's peers got together, and Ring was told to stop all superpower activity. Ring refused to stop, of course. Ring loved causing chaos, and Ring was drunk on his own power. Unfortunately, Ring was so powerful and so clever, there were only a few people who could control him, and it was virtually impossible to contain him. Sandor was one of the few who had matching power. Much of Sandor's life was spent battling Ring, trying to eliminate him.
Eliminate? Diesel did a slash across the throat and a looking dead face.
Anyway, Sandor never succeeded, but he did manage to cripple Ring from time to time, making Ring ineffective for years or months, sending Ring into hiding.
And now Ring's lost his power too?
Pretty much. He was in the locked ward at Lakewood. They have a special area for villains and Alzheimer's. Somehow he managed to get out. I guess he has power left that no one knew about.
So here I am having a conversation about what? Superheroes. And I'm having it with a guy who rolled his eyes because I suggested the possible reality of elves. Where do you fit into this? I asked.
I'm kind of like you. I track people down who've strayed from the system. And I go after bad guys.
Chapter 4. Okay. I'm sitting in a car with a guy who thinks he's part of a super society. And the weird thing is, I'm half believing him. Truth is, I kind of like the idea that there are some superheroes out there trying to save us from ourselves. I'm not sure how I feel about Diesel being one of them. Let me get this straight, I said to Diesel. You're after Ring, right? You want to get him back to Lakewood. And in the meantime, you're worried Sandor is in danger. Diesel pulled away from the curb, cruised down the street, and turned at the corner.
When Ring was in his prime, he worked with electricity.
What, like with PSE&G?
That cracked Diesel up. No, like he was electrical man. He could make lightning. I don't know how he did it. I always thought it was kind of show-off, but hell, he could do a lot of damage. I don't know how dangerous he is now. I have a feeling he tried to destroy the toy store, but only could get up enough juice to knock boxes off the shelves. And then I'm guessing he got pissed off and tore the sign off the front of the store. A few of the boxes in the store were singed, so it seemed like he was able to throw some electricity, but maybe not accurately and probably of short duration. Nothing to lose sleep over. The power outages are different. If he's responsible for the power outages, it means he's gaining power somehow. And I don't like the way the air feels around Sandor's house.
Do you think Sandor will get in touch with you? I asked Diesel.
No, he's always worked alone. I can't see him asking for help now.
My phone buzzed in my handbag.
You were right about the horse, Valerie said. I don't know what I was thinking. It's impossible to get a horse at this late date. It isn't like they sell them in Sears. So I got Mary Alice a book about horses, and I got her a sleeping bag with horses on it. I have to get something for Mom now. Do you have any ideas?
I thought you got Mom a robe.
Yes, but that doesn't seem like enough. It's only one box to open. What do you think about perfume? Or a blouse? And I can get a nightgown to go with the robe, and then some slippers.
Maybe you've shopped enough for one day, Val. Maybe you're sort of carried away with shopping.
I can't shop now. I hardly have anything. And there are only 3 shopping days left.
How much coffee have you had today, Val? You might want to think about cutting back on the coffee.
Gotta go,
Valerie said, and she disconnected.
So where were we?
I asked Diesel. We were saving the world.
Oh, yeah. Personally, I'd be happy just to collect my finder's fee on Sandy Claus so I could make the minimum payment on my credit card.
Do you think Connie has the water and electric information on Claus yet?
I called Connie, but the information wasn't helpful. No additional accounts for Sandy Claus. I had her try Sandra Clausen. Big zero there, too. Diesel stopped for a light, and I saw his eyes cut to the rearview mirror and the line of his mouth tighten.
I'm getting a real bad feeling.
Diesel made a U-turn, and suddenly there was a flash of light in the sky in front of us. The light was followed by a low rumbling, and then there was another flash, and smoke billowed over the rooftops. Diesel stared at the smoke.
Ring!
It took us less than a minute to return to Claus' house. Diesel parked the Jag, and we joined the small group of people who'd collected in the street, eyes wide, mouths open in astonishment. Not often you see lightning at this time of the year. Not often you see the sort of carnage that resulted from the strike. The Claus' house was perfectly intact, but the life-size plastic Santa that had been strapped to the next-door neighbor's chimney had been blasted off the roof and lay in a smoking, melted red blob on the sidewalk, and the neighbor's garage was on fire. "He melted Santa," I said to Diesel. "This is serious stuff." Diesel gave his head a disbelieving shake.
"He hit the wrong house. All those years of inciting terror, and this is what it comes down to. Frying some molded plastic. And not even the right molded plastic."
"I saw the whole thing," a woman said. "I was on the porch checking my lights, and a ball of fire swooped out of the sky and hit the Pattersons' garage. And then a second ball came in and knocked the Santa Claus off the roof. I've never seen anything like it. Santa just flew off the roof."
"Did anyone else see the fireballs?" Diesel asked.
"There was a man on the sidewalk across the street from Sandy and Elaine's house, but he's gone now. He was an older gentleman, and he seemed pretty upset."
A police car arrived, lights flashing. A fire truck followed close behind, and hoses were run to the garage. Elaine was on her porch. She had a heavy wool coat pulled around her dumpling body, and she had a belligerent set to her mouth. Diesel draped an arm across my shoulders.
"Okay, partner, let's talk to Elaine."
Elaine drew the jacket tighter when we got closer.
"Crazy old fool," she said. "Doesn't know when to stop."
"Did you see him?" Diesel asked.
"No. I heard the crackle of electricity and I knew he was out there. By the time I got to the porch, he was gone. It's just like him to attack at Christmas, too. The man is pure evil."
"It's not a good idea for you to stay here," Diesel said. "Do you have someplace else to go? Would you like me to find a safe house for you?"
Elaine tipped her chin up a fraction of an inch.
"I'm not leaving my home. I have cookies to make, and someone has to keep the bird feeders filled in the backyard. The birds count on it. I've been taking care of Sandor ever since my husband died 15 years ago, and I've never once had to resort to a safe house."
"Sandor was always able to protect you. Now that his power is failing, you need to be more careful," Diesel said.
Elaine bit into her lower lip.
"You'll have to excuse me. I have to get back to my baking."
Elaine retreated into her house, and Diesel and I were left on the porch. The garage fire was almost extinguished, and someone, who I suspected was Mrs. Patterson, was attempting to pry Santa off the sidewalk with a barbecue spatula. My phone chirped from my bag.
"If that's your sister again, I'm throwing your phone in the river," Diesel said.
I pulled the phone out of my bag and pressed the off button. I knew it was my sister, and there was an outside chance Diesel was serious about throwing the phone in the river.
"Now what?" I asked Diesel.
"Lester knows where the factory is."
"Forget it. I'm not going back to the employment office."
Diesel smiled down at me.
"What's the matter? Is the big bad bounty hunter afraid of the little people?"
"Those fake elves were crazy, and they were mean."
Diesel ruffled my hair.
"Don't worry. I won't let them be mean to you."
"Swell." diesel parked half a block from the employment office, and we sat wordlessly staring at the emergency vehicles in front of us. A fire truck, an EMT truck, and 4 police cars. The windows in the front door to the office were shattered, and a charred chair had been dragged out to the sidewalk. We left the car and walked over to a couple cops I recognized, Carl Costanza and Big Dog. They were standing back on their heels, hands resting on their utility belts, surveying the damage with the sort of enthusiasm usually reserved for watching grass grow. "What happened?" I asked.
"Fire, riot, the usual. It's pretty ugly in there," Carl said.
"Bodies?"
"Cookies. Smashed cookies all over the place."
Big Dog had an elf ear in his hand. He held it up and looked at it.
"And these things?"
"It's an elf ear," I said.
"Yeah, these ears are all that's left of the little buggers."
"Did they burn?" I asked.
"No, they ran," Carl said. "Who would have thought the little guys could run that fast? Couldn't catch a single one of them. We arrived on the scene and they took off like roaches when the light goes on."
"How did the fire get started?" Carl shrugged and looked up at Diesel.
"Who's he?"
"Diesel."
"Does Joe know about him?"
"Diesel is from out of town."
"Way out."
"We're working a skip together." There wasn't anything more to be learned from the employment office, so we left Carl and Big Dog and returned to the car. The sun was shining someplace other than Trenton. Streetlights were on, and the temperature had dropped by 10 degrees. My feet were wet from slogging through 2 fire scenes, and my nose was numb, frozen like a popsicle. "Take me home," I said to Diesel. "I'm done."
"What, no shopping? No Christmas cheer? Are you going to let your sister beat you out in the present race?"
"I'll shop tomorrow. I swear I will." Diesel parked the Jag in my apartment building parking lot and got out of the car. "It's not necessary to see me to the door," I said. "I imagine you want to get back to the ring search."
"Nope. I'm done for the day. I thought we'd have something to eat and then chill in front of the TV."
I was momentarily speechless. That wasn't the evening I had planned out in my mind. I was going to stand in a scalding hot shower until I was all wrinkly. Then I was going to make myself a peanut butter and marshmallow fluff sandwich. I like peanut butter and fluff because it combines the main course with the dessert and it doesn't involve pots. Maybe I'd watch some television after dinner. And if I was lucky, I'd be watching it with Morelli. "That sounds great," I said, "but I have plans for tonight. Maybe some other time."
"What are your plans?"
"I'm seeing Morelli."
"Are you sure?"
"Yes." No, I wasn't sure. I figured the possibility was about 50%. "And I wanted to take a shower."
"Hey, you can take a shower while I make dinner."
"You can cook?"
"No," he said. "I can dial."
"Okay, so here's the thing. I don't feel entirely comfortable with you in my apartment."
"I thought you were getting used to this super diesel thing."
Old Mr. Feinstein shuffled past us on his way to his car.
"Hey, Chicky," he said to me. "How's it going? You need any help here? This guy looks shifty."
"I'm fine," I told Mr. Feinstein. "Thanks for the offer, though." "See that?" I said to Diesel. "You look shifty."
"I'm a pussycat," Diesel said. "I haven't even come on to you. Okay, maybe a little teasing, but nothing serious. I haven't grabbed you like this."
He wrapped his fingers around my jacket lapels and pulled me to him.
"And I haven't kissed you like this."
And he kissed me. My toes curled in my shoes, and heat slashed through my stomach and headed south.
Damn.
He broke from the kiss and smiled down at me.
"It isn't as if I've done anything like that, right?"
I gave him a 2-handed shot to the chest, but he didn't budge, so I took a step back. "There will be no kissing, no fooling around, no anything."
"Sure."
I did an I give up gesture, turned, and went into the building. Diesel followed after me, and we waited in silence for the elevator. The doors opened, and Mrs. Bessler smiled out at me. Mrs. Bessler is just about the oldest person I've ever seen. She lives alone on the third floor, and she likes to play elevator operator when she gets bored.
"Going up,"
she called out. "Second floor," I said. The elevator doors closed, and Mrs. Bessler chanted,
"Ladies' handbag, Santa's workshop, better dresses."
She looked at me and shook her finger.
"Only 3 shopping days left."
I know," I said. "I'll go shopping tomorrow. I swear I will." Diesel and I stepped out of the elevator, and Mrs. Bessler sang, "It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas," as we walked down the hall.
"I'm laying odds she's 80 proof," Diesel said, opening my door.
My apartment was dark, lit only by the blue digital clock on my microwave and the single red blinking diode on my answering machine. Rex ran on his wheel in the kitchen. The soft whir of his wheel reassured me that Rex was safe, and probably there weren't any bridge trolls hiding in my closet tonight. I flipped the light, and Rex immediately stopped running and blinked out at me. I dropped a couple Fruit Loops into his cage from the box on the counter, and Rex was a happy camper. I hit the play button on the answering machine and unbuttoned my jacket. First message.
"It's Joe. Give me a call."
Next message. "Stephanie, it's your mother. You don't have your cell phone on. Is something wrong? Where are you?" Third message.
"It's Joe again. I'm stuck on this job, and I won't make it over tonight. And don't call me. I can't always talk. I'll call back when I can."
Fourth message.
"Christ," Morelli said.
"Guess it's just you and me," Diesel said, grinning. "Good thing I'm here. You'd be lonely."
And the terrible part was that he was right. I had one foot on the slippery slope of Christmas depression. Christmas was sliding away from me. 5 days, 4 days, 3 days, and before my eyes, Christmas would come and go without me, and I'd have to wait an entire year to take another crack at a ribbons and bows, candy canes, and eggnog Christmas. "Christmas isn't ribbons and bows and presents," I said to Diesel. "Christmas is about goodwill, right?"
"Wrong. Christmas is about presents, and Christmas trees, and office parties. Boy, you don't know much, do you?"
"Do you really believe that?"
"Aside from all the religious blah, 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 which we won't get into, I think Christmas is whatever turns you on. That's what I really believe. Everyone decides what they want out of Christmas. Then everyone gets a shot at making it happen."
"Suppose every year you blow it. Suppose every year you screw up Christmas." He crooked his arm around my neck.
"Are you screwing up Christmas, kiddo?"
"I can't seem to get to it." Diesel looked around.
"I noticed. No garlands of green shit. No angels, no Rudolphs, no kerplunkers or tartufers."
"I used to have some tartufers, but my apartment got firebombed and they all went up in smoke." Diesel shook his head.
"Don't you hate it when that happens?"